Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today we journey to Falmouth, Massachusetts, and we have our guest, Tom Van Zabern. I'll tell you a little bit about Tom. Tom was born in 1961 in West Germany and spent his formative years on the good side of the Iron Curtain. In 1969, his family moved to the USA, where they spent years in suburban New York and then relocated to southwestern New Hampshire. In 1991, he moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, in search of a more welcoming, more accepting setting, and spent 28 happy years there as a real estate professional and home design consultant, finally moving to Falmouth on Cape Cod in 2018 with his husband Billy to buy a Palmer House Inn, a 17-room bed and breakfast. They have been here ever since. Billy, a native of Jamaica, came to the USA in 1975, spending his childhood and adolescence on Long Island and moving to Virginia and Florida in his professional life as a nurse and nursing home manager. Billy and Tom met in 2010, and he joined Tom in Cambridge the same year. They spent the last 5 years renovating their Cape Cod Inn and run it together with Brody, their six-year-old Leon Burger. Is it Leon Burger or Leon Berger? Okay. As innkeepers, they have incorporated everything they previously learned to design a welcoming and tranquil environment for their guests, combining the laid-back lifestyle enjoyed by well-to-do people of the Gilded Age with traditional Cape Cod cottage garden grounds. They welcome both gay and straight guests, from singles looking for an escape to couples celebrating life together to bridal couples looking to tie the knot on the Cape. Welcome, Tom. Welcome to the podcast. And tell our listeners how you chose Falmouth as a place to live.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here. We chose Falmouth, or let me say Falmouth chose us, because the inn was an accidental discovery. When you're looking for a bed and breakfast, word gets around in the real estate community, and we kept getting emails from brokers wanting to unload their inns in North Dakota and, you know, places like that, and really cold places we didn't want to move to. And the week before Christmas in 2017, having received another such email, I went online and typed into the browser, bed and breakfast for sale on Cape Cod. Palmer House Inn was the first thing that showed up. Now, this place was more expensive than we had anticipated, more than we wanted to spend, certainly. But nevertheless, I showed it to Billy. He loved the pictures as much as I did. So in January, we went to see it. And then the rest was just a matter of trying to figure out how to make it happen. But here we are.
And what year was that?
2018.
Very good. Very good. So tell us geographically, where is Falmouth in the state of Massachusetts?
Well, Cape Cod is the extreme southeastern appendage of the state, and it is shaped a little bit like an arm being flexed, with Provincetown being the fingertips to the fist that would result. And so Falmouth would be at the base. Well, I hate to say it, but it would actually be, you know, in that pictorial, it would be the armpit, but in real life, it's far from an armpit. So, but if you look at it on the map, that's kind of what it would be like. It's the extreme southwestern end of the Cape, overlooking Buzzards Bay and then Martha's Vineyard Sound. And Martha's Vineyard, an island of roughly 26 square miles, is about 5 miles south of us and acts as a buffer, sheltering us from storms that might come rumbling up the East Coast. And so the impact always tends to be a little bit less in Falmouth than it's elsewhere on the East Coast, because we do have that nice protective zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been out to Martha's Vineyard, so 5 miles away is pretty nice. pretty nice area out there.
Such a great place. That's so nice.
And how far is it from P-Town driving?
It's about an hour and 15 minutes.
That's not bad.
If you do it in the summer and July, for instance, or August, and you might end up spending about an hour and a half to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand the traffic. Okay. Tell us about the climate. So we're in the northeast. Is it, how cold does it get in the winters? How warm does it get in the summers? Do you get a lot of rain in the summer as well?
Let's start with a good part. In the summer, we tend to go up to about 95 degrees, and that's about the upper end. So it would be a rare thing for us to hit three digits. Most of our days in the summer tend to be between, you know, let's say 82 degrees and 90. That would be about average. Anything over 90 qualifies as warm. Anything over 95 qualifies as really hot. And we tend to start seeing summer weather in late June and then going through the end of September. So the, you know, the seasons are shifted a little bit in the sense that everything tends to occur about a month later than would be the case when you go further inland. And we put that down as the down to the tempering effects of being right on the ocean. And the ocean obviously takes longer to warm up in the summer than, or in the spring, I should say, than it would inland. And conversely, it stays warm longer in the fall. So last fall, we saw people swimming in early November, and they didn't seem to have any hesitations going in. Now, personally, I stopped by about mid-September.
Yeah, I would too.
I like it warm. Yeah. Now, in the winter, winter really starts in December. December tends to be fairly temperate with some cold days. Ditto for January. February is really the coldest month, and March tends to be chilly. So when, you know, when areas further south are already starting to look at that spring-like weather around March 15th or so, we're still getting frost. And now, we did have a cold snap in February. That broke all records over the last 20 years, and it was a one-night event that went down to minus 6 degrees. Oof. And we've been here for 5 years now, and the coldest it ever got before was about, you know, 9 or 10 degrees Fahrenheit. So minus 6 was really unusual.
Yeah.
And then the plumbers of the world on the Cape, they were going crazy because everybody was having a problem. Normally, we just don't get those types of temperatures. And as I said, it lasted one night, and the next day, it was back up in the teens, and then it gradually went up into the 20s. And after about 3 days, we were back over freezing.
Okay.
But in the winter, we tend to run anything from about 25 degrees to 37 or 38. Those would be average temperatures. So in that sense, it's considerably milder than it would be, let's say, in Vermont or upstate New York or most of Maine. And we've got guests coming from those areas just to warm up because it's much more temperate here.
How has climate change affected the area?
It hasn't really done so to any great degree. I mean, we've had storms in the summer and in the fall. And old timers tell me that they're no worse than storms that existed 25 and 30 years ago. So it's been pretty much the same thing.
Not experiencing flooding or like tornadoes or stuff like that, yeah. Hurricanes.
No. Okay. One thing I've noticed is on the Cape that the months of July and August tend to be dry. And then in September, we tend to get sort of little clumps of days where for 2 or 3 days it might rain. And so September is the time we essentially catch up on rainfall. But if you're going to come visit, then July and August are really predictable months. It's really nice.
So, Tom, is living in an LGBTQ community important to you? And what's it like? What's the vibe like in Falmouth? Is it welcoming? I don't think there is like a gayborhood, so to speak, because it's pretty rural.
Well, When I first moved to Massachusetts, just to backtrack a little bit, it was 1991, and I left New Hampshire and came here to reside in a more inclusive area. And in the 90s, there were a number of bars and clubs in Boston and in Cambridge, And it was really such that if you wanted to socialize with other gay people, you would congregate in those establishments. And then over time, for all intents and purposes, the clubs and bars went away and were replaced with really a sense of integration into the fabric of society as a whole. And conversely, those clubs that still do exist have become, in essence, co-ed, as more and more straight people come to enjoy the party scene put on by the gay guys, you know. And so there's not much separation anymore. And when we moved here, we didn't even consider the gay scene. We just wanted to be in a nice, safe, welcoming area. And in that sense, Falmouth has not disappointed. Now, my husband is Jamaican. He's black. And I think a number of interracial couples may have experienced discrimination or problems in a number of areas, and there was absolutely nothing.
That's wonderful.
And there've been no instances of Billy being stopped for driving a nice car or harassed or anything. It just hasn't been a factor in our lives.
That's great.
And just being gay is not an issue. We're completely out. We're completely open. And do we have a gay flag hanging in the front yard? No, we don't need it. So we don't have to.
So nobody cares. Nobody blinks an eye.
And we have gay friends. We have lesbian friends. And none of our gay friends have ever mentioned having a problem here.
So is there a gay community? Like, do you have gay friends that you socialize with?
Yeah, there is. We've got gay friends that we just met in ordinary life, and there's a gay men's group in Falmouth. We went to one of their meetings, and the people were very nice. But at the time, we were really involved in restoring the inn, and didn't have a whole lot of time to go out and to party and to hang out with others. And so, at some point in time, we may go back to the group.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice group, and it didn't really offer up the cliquishness that you tend to sometimes get in larger cities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at least, yeah, it seems like it's a really nice area to make friends. Is it easy to make friends, or is it just like any other place? You have to be outgoing, of course.
People are pretty welcoming. It's nice. And we also have gay guests at the inn, and both single people and then a lot of couples. And it seems that demographically, the gay couples we get have been together for a long time, they're stable, and really don't have much interest in the bar scene. So it's more of a sense of wanting to come with your spouse and just having quality time together rather than going out and party. So in that sense, it's very different from P-Town.
Uh-huh.
Now, Billy and I have gone to P-Town for years. We love it. And it's an absolutely wonderful place to go to if you're a gay person and you want to be around other gay people. And so we have absolutely nothing against the scene in P-Town. This is a lot more quiet, a lot more laid back. And the restaurant scene is very good. There's summer theater, there's musical theater, there are workshops, there are lectures, there are museums. And so there's plenty to keep busy. About the one thing we really don't have here is the bar scene.
The gay bar. Do you have any kind of bars?
Yeah, there's a nice Irish pub in town, and then there's Grumpy's. It's a pub down the street, and we haven't been to that, so I couldn't give you a statement as to what it's like.
Oh, that sounds like it's for me. No, just kidding.
Well, yeah, sometimes when you're outside, you can sort of hear music coming over from Grumpy's if they wind happens to blow in the right direction, and it's sort of, you know, traditional rock and roll with a little bit of a country vibe. So,
gotcha. I love the name.
And Liam's, the Irish pub. That's Irish music. You go there to hear Irish music, and it's fun. That's nice.
Tell us what the local economy is like. Can you provide examples of real estate prices, homes versus, I don't know if people rent out there, as opposed to purchasing? And
I would say most of the homes are owned. And on some level, Falmouth reflects the overall demographic of the Cape. It's really a tale of two societies. and you get the demographic that's well educated and well funded, and then the remainder of the demographic is really service providers. And for service providers, it can be hard. The Cape is not cheap. I'm not going to kid you about that. Real estate is fairly expensive. And yes, you can find a house for $300,000 or $400,000. And it's going to be a very ordinary house. If you want
something special,
you know, a Victorian with an ocean view, you take that $400,000 and you add $2 million to it, and that might get you in the door. So is there something in every price bracket? There is. But the predominant two orientations are the very expensive and then the more affordable.
Got it.
I mean, you can get something quite nice starting at about $1 million. But then I think the most expensive property we had in Falmouth last year was an oceanfront estate for $24 million. And I don't know at this point in time if it's sold or not. Mm-hmm. And then there's everything in between. And starting at about $2 million, you can find something with either ocean frontage or something very nice with beach rights.
And if you didn't do the ocean front and you want to be modest, can you find something for $400,000 or $500,000 that's a decent?
You can. Okay. You might choose to update those houses and, you know, do something with the kitchens and bathrooms. But by and large, you could get something, either a Cape house or a ranch house on perhaps half an acre or so, and it would give you some privacy. And there was a lot that was built from about 1950 right through today. So there's a fairly substantial housing stock that's newer in nature, with a lot of houses that date back to the 80s and 90s. So they're structurally sound. So you don't really have to worry about them falling apart. It's just that after 35 or 40 years, you might not find that the kitchens and bathrooms are state of the art, and right. You can live with them or choose to do something to, you know, to jazz them up a little bit.
Okay, got it. How about utilities, like gas and electric and your cable bills and stuff like that? Are they just, what are they like?
Well, it's a little bit difficult for me to answer that one because we have the inn. And we've got the 17 guest rooms plus staff quarters and then our own house on the property. So obviously our utility bills are high. But if I break it down to sort of price per therm for heating, for instance, or price per kilowatt hour, it's essentially comparable with anything else in the Northeast. So once you start going to one of the islands, Nantucket, Martha's Vineyard, and so on and so forth, you really find much higher prices for things like gasoline and heating oil and so on, because everything has to be trucked in.
Yeah.
But in this case, we have natural gas, as do most people in town. And so we heat with gas and it's reliable. And one thing in terms of utilities, one thing we did do was to outfit every building on the grounds with a generator. And we do have a coastal climate here. We get storms, especially in the off season. And the Cape is an area that has dense tree covers. So sometimes, you know, you get a storm and the lights go out because some tree fell down somewhere and knocked down the power lines.
Right.
And so in the interest of just maintaining that guarantee of a comfortable stay for our guests, we decided to go the generator route. And that's something then that we advertise to our guests. As, by the way, if you come here, yeah, the party goes on if the lights go out elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Very good. How about water bills? Are they expensive?
No.
No?
And for water, we pay less here for water for 17 rooms plus our house than we did for a three-family house in Cambridge.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I want to know a little. Towards the end, we're going to talk about the inn. I'm curious to hear about that as well. So... Okay. So if one really wants the theater or the art scene, do they have to go into Boston to do that? Or is there something right in town that you can get your little fix? Do they have local theater?
There's certainly theater. And I would equate that with high quality community theater on a year-round basis. And then we've got CLOCK, the College Light Opera Company. And that's a seasonal musical institution. And now that goes one step above and beyond community theater. That's professional level theater. And you get that in the summer. Now, if you want to go out in the winter and see a musical or see a performance or something like that, there are performances here. If you really want something outstanding, then yeah, go to Boston. It's an hour and a quarter, an hour and a half away. And
yeah, and you can get your
fix there. If you want serious opera or serious ballet, then, you know, you have to go to a city. And a small community is not going to be able to match that.
Right.
And that's, again, not to denigrate the performances here. We've seen a number of performances. They're wonderful. But, you know, if you want to go see Verdi's Aida, that's not going to happen here.
Right.
That's going to require a major stage.
Yeah.
In fact, if you're going to do that, my suggestion would be, you know, take the Amtrak and head to New York and do it.
New York. I was just going to say that. Yeah. Yep. Okay. So I love food, so I want to talk about a little bit about the food scene, restaurants. Mm-hmm. And before I forget, as far as cost of living is concerned, is supermarket grocery food that you get any more expensive than anywhere else because you're on the Cape?
No.
Okay.
Again, everything is accessible to deliver by trucking. So it's just a matter for delivery trucks to cross the bridge at Bourne or at Sagamore, and they're here.
Okay.
And speaking of groceries, when we left Cambridge and came here, we were a little bit apprehensive because where we lived, we had Trader Joe's on one side of the house and Whole Foods on the other. Each one was about a 3-minute walk away, so it was ideal. I mean, you could literally get anything you wanted to.
Right.
And so when we came here, we thought, well, all right, what have we done? And it turned out that there's really very little sacrifice we had to make. There's the Windfall Market, which is kind of if you think of a love child between Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, you get the Windfall Market. So by and large, we have access to organic produce and organic fish and meats and cheeses and fruit and so on and so forth. And the bakery at the Windfall Market is better than anything we ever got at the Whole Foods Market in Cambridge. And they really knock it out of the park. And then there's the French Bakery. And there's Whole Foods and Trader Joe's in Hyannis. So if we really feel we need something, we get in the car, and it's about a 35-minute drive to get there.
Not too bad.
No.
Yes. So okay. You have pretty much everything there. So pretty.
Well, Mark, let me put it this way. I haven't been back to Boston in almost 5 years.
That'll answer it.
And, you know, and I feel as though all my needs are being met here.
That's great. Tell us about restaurants. Are there good restaurants, or do you have to travel a little bit to get to them, or are they in town?
Well, the closest really good restaurant is across the street and then down six doors.
Oh, wow.
So that takes a minute and a half to get to on foot. And that's just an upscale American fusion restaurant and with a healthy orientation. And a number of our guests go there for anniversary celebrations and birthdays and so on and so forth. And so that's pretty wonderful. That's the Glass Onion. And then in town, it's more a question of choosing what kind of ethnicity you're after. And do you want Italian food? Well, what kind of Italian food? Pizza, calzones, Southern Italian, pasta dishes, Northern Italian. And there are about 3 or 4 Italian restaurants in town that each cater to a different part of Italian cuisine. And one of them, the Osteria La Civetta, it's like a miniature trip to Florence. It's, you know, it's
nice.
Tuscan cuisine, and their antipasto is wonderful, and their seafood dishes are amazing. And if you were to ask me what they serve, I couldn't tell you. They change the menu every day, and it's 6 or 7 items on the menu, that's it. And every day they change it.
And sounds yummy.
So I could never tell you what it's going to be. And they do have some staples like tiramisu and cannoli and so on. Then they have those at all times. But then they always have something special that they create just for that specific day. Then we've got any type of seafood restaurant you can think of. There's
That's
Greek,
my favorite.
There's Indian, there's Mexican, there's Chinese, there's sushi, there's Thai. And I mean, you know, it's all here.
Wow.
And the crazy thing is, if you want to eat lobster, you'd go to the Mexican restaurant. They have a Cracker Jack lobster enchilada, and an enchilada they stuff with fresh lobster.
Mm. So
you can leave your power tools at home. Don't bring your PPE. You don't have to worry about spraying other people at the table as you're trying to get at the meat and the lobster, you know, and the lobster claws. Mm. And you just pull out your knife and fork and you start eating. And it's lobster that was probably harvested the day before and then brought to the restaurant. So it's really a foodie place.
Wow.
And there's a French bakery. There are two chocolate and ice cream stores. They make their own chocolates. They make their own ice creams. There's another ice cream store in East Falmouth. It's about a 10-minute drive away by car. There's a creamery up in Bourne. So during the summer, if we want to get away for an afternoon, you know, we'll just take one of the convertibles, roll back the roof, drive to one of the creameries, and then sit down and just gorge ourselves on freshly made ice cream.
Oh, that's so good.
So now there is a downside to all that. And a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, Billy and I both started going low carb because we were blowing up like balloons.
Oh, that's so funny. I've been there, believe me.
But that, you know, if you don't want to do that, just buy yourself a bicycle, and you've got so many bike trails, and you can work off all the calories.
That sounds great. So, Tom, does Falmouth have like a downtown where you have a choice of all these restaurants that you can walk to?
Yep.
So it's like a nice little quaint downtown?
There's a 4-minute walk from where we are.
Oh, wow.
You pass the very traditional Village Green, which I would recommend to your listeners to Google and to look at the pictures. And it's so well preserved that it's on the National Historic Register, as is the village, as is our neighborhood. So it hasn't changed in 140 years, and in the foreseeable future it won't. So it's a very nice village. Everything's walkable. And if you want to, you can walk out the other side of the village and get to the beach.
So if I stay at your inn, I could walk 4 minutes to town?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody should stay at Tom's Inn.
That's
good. So we'll talk about that.
It's a nice village.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
We get people from Europe, you know, guests from Europe, from the British Islands, from Germany, France, Switzerland. And when you get people from those countries complimenting you on how nice your village is, I mean, these are people that are used to wonderful villages.
Yeah.
And Falmouth, you know, has garnered praise from guests from those areas.
So let's segue into your inn. Let's talk a little bit about your inn. So you said it was a 17-room inn?
Is it
separate cottages on land, or is there a main building?
Well, there's a main building with 12 rooms.
Oh, okay.
And the oldest part of that goes back to 1901. And
wow.
It was built by a ship owner who sailed his fleet out of New Bedford. That he built this for his family, and when it was done, he gave it to his wife, and he just wanted to do something nice for her and make her day, so he built her a house. So the house started on a romantic note, and people still feel it when they come today. So that's 12 rooms, and that house was expanded, and our main dining room is in the newer section. That's about 35 years old at this point. And the largest rooms are over the dining room, so that's sort of the back part of the inn. And it was built in a style to complement the original architecture of the inn. And then we have the guest house. That was originally the carriage house that has 4 rooms. Those are our dog-friendly rooms. And you're welcome to bring a dog of any size, any age, any breed, as long as you're able to tell us in writing that your dog is house-trained and that your dog is not going to try to eat the other guests. Then as long as those two conditions are met, you know, then you're welcome to bring your dog. And then we have a separate cottage.
That's
the 17th room, the Henry David Thoreau cottage. And that's privately situated. It's behind a hedge. It's sort of hidden from view. It has its own little garden. And that has 2 bedrooms with a shared bathroom and then a living room and kitchenette.
Wow, it sounds lovely.
Popular with families, and sometimes we get friends that like to travel together, but not necessarily sleep together, and they'll rent the cottage and just use the two bedrooms for that purpose.
Okay, you say bed and breakfast, so who cooks? Do you both cook?
I don't, and you don't want me in the kitchen cooking. I think it would drive away guests. And Billy, by contrast, is a very good cook. And then we have two cooks that we hire, and depending on the need, depending on the occupancy, and then we have wait staff. So during those busy days in June, July, and August, and September, it can be pretty lively in the kitchen.
So during those days, what's a typical breakfast like?
Well, there's always a main course, and that changes from day to day. It could be waffles. It might be an omelet of some variety. It could be different types of pancakes. When we're really lucky, then Billy makes his bread pudding, which is to die for, wonderful. You know, the tart cherry bread pudding or the cranberry bread pudding is just out of this world. Sometimes it'll be something else. It might be a strata or a souffle or a quiche of some variety. And then with that, there's always some kind of a bread dish. You can order toast if you like. Sometimes there are scones or biscuits, and everything's made in-house, so everything's made right in the kitchen. In addition to that, there's always some kind of a side of meat. It might be bacon, it might be ham, it could be breakfast links, and we have vegetarian options, gluten-free options, low-carb options, and then there's always some kind of a fruit dish that goes with it. And during the summer, it's generally strawberries and blueberries, or it might be diced melons, and it's just a variety of things. Sometimes there are raspberries mixed in, and then sometimes it's prepared fruit. It could be a compote, it could be, you know, a baked apple or something like that, and so it really depends.
I'm getting hungry, and every time I hear food, I have a smile on my face. Food just makes me happy.
And then, there's the standard assortment of sides that you can order, and oatmeal if you want it. So you could get eggs to order. There's obviously cereal and granola. There's yogurt, milk, almond milk. So we tend to get a number of guests with dietary needs. There are a lot of people with gluten allergies or allergies to dairy or milk or peanuts or something. Yeah. And by the way, before you check in, we ask you directly, do you have any food allergies the kitchen needs to be aware of?
That's good.
And we ask you to sign the guest register and to indicate if you have any allergies. And so if at any point in time you develop an allergic reaction during breakfast, that's on you because you were asked and we were very careful about trying to extract that information from you.
Of course.
And if you forget that you're not allowed to have eggs, then, and you don't tell us, then we have no way of knowing that that's a problem.
Right.
So,
do you have a communal, like a dining area where everyone gets together for breakfast at the same time? People are coming and going. How does that work?
Breakfast is served over a 1.5-hour period.
Okay.
So from 8 to 9:30. And during that time, you come whenever you like. And again, during the summer when it's busy, we also have outdoor tables.
Oh, nice.
And so sometimes a number of our guests will eat outdoors, others will eat indoors. And I mean, it's really a matter of personal taste. And we try to be accommodating to that.
How's the mosquitoes?
What mosquitoes?
Oh, you don't have mosquitoes?
We do, but they're minimal.
Okay. They usually find me. That's why I ask.
And we don't have much in the way of mosquitoes.
What's the name of your inn, Tom?
It's the Palmer House Inn.
Palmer House Inn.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll tell our guests where to find that on the web afterwards.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Tell us about transportation, the traffic situation, accessibility to the airport. What is the closest airport? And I would imagine you do need a car to get around because it's a rural type of area.
You do and you don't. It depends. And in order to get here, And if our guests come from out of the area, typically they'll fly either into Providence, Rhode Island, or into Boston, Logan, and then rent a car. And there is limousine service to Providence, and there is the Peter Pan bus from the airport in Boston. And the Peter Pan bus also stops at South Station. So it doesn't really matter if you come flying in or if you take the Amtrak. If you go to Boston and you decide to take the bus, it's the same bus. And the bus stop is a 5-minute walk from our inn. And if you have really heavy luggage, or you're stuck with luggage, or it's difficult for you to walk, we'll come get you at the bus station. A number of our guests just kind of like doing the 5-minute walk from the station to here. And then two doors away from us is the bicycle shop. So a number of our guests will rent bikes. So yes, a car can be incredibly useful to get around on the Cape. But you see, we have a number of guests that come that want to get away from driving.
Yeah.
And especially if it's somebody from Texas or Colorado or an area where it's normal to drive long distances.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have guests that ordinarily will spend 7, 8, 9, 10 hours a week in the car, then more often than not, those guests will ask us, okay, how do we spend our vacation and not even look at the car?
So then
we start talking about bikes, and we start talking about the things you can do on foot. And we've had guests here for a week and a half, and they didn't even look at the car during the whole time.
That would be me. That would be me, because I myself, coming from New York, I never really drove much in New York at all. Mm-hmm. I only drove when I moved to Florida because I had to. Even here in Phoenix, I let my husband do the drive, most of the driving, although you need a car here too. But if I could find a place where I could just vacation or hang out, you know, without a car, that's fine with me.
Last year, I drove 350 miles. That was it for the entire year.
That's nothing. Yeah.
So,
yeah. How far is Providence?
It's about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a nice scene for dining. And of course, they have water fire over there during the warm months on weekends during the evening. And it's a lovely place to visit. And it's easy to get to.
Yeah. An hour away is not bad at all.
And okay. If you're coming from Boston, if you're coming by car, or from Providence for that matter, it's not really a problem to get to the Cape, except if you do it on a Friday afternoon. Then you have to allow extra time to cross the bridges. And because and a bunch of other people are all going to have the same idea about coming here.
Right.
So if that's the case, then, you know, just allow enough time. And it's not really an issue unless you have reservations to go with your car to Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
And then it's obviously a timed situation. You have to be punctual to be able to load your car before the ferry leaves. And if you're late, they will leave without you.
Yeah.
So if you do that, just make sure you've got plenty of time.
And how long, if you could take your car onto the ferry, right? Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
How long is that ferry ride?
45 minutes.
Okay.
Out of Woods Hole. And Woods Hole is about a 6 or 7 minute drive from where we are. And so then there's loading. And so regardless of whether you take your car or you go just as a pedestrian passenger, we recommend that you leave about 45 minutes before sailing. And normally that's plenty of time and to make sure it's not a stress thing. But if you do take your car, you don't want to be the last one on the boat. And go early, because when you arrive, the first people to drive onto the ferry
are the last off.
No, they're the first ones off.
Oh, they are?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
See, the ferry has openings on both sides. It has doors on both sides. So if you're the last one there, you're the last one off the ferry, and you get to sit there for half an hour while everybody else leaves, and you get to sample all their exhaust fumes.
Yeah. Oh, not fun.
So, much nicer
to
be a little bit early and then be the first one off the ferry.
Good to know.
Yeah.
So tell us, what's crime like? Does crime exist there? I know it's not going to be like a major city, but is it more petty theft? What, give us a, an idea of what that's like. Will I feel safe totally walking at 2 a.m, walking my dog if I had to?
Yeah. So far, knock on wood, we've been completely unaffected by crime. There's been no crime whatsoever. It's safe. A number of our guests bring bicycles and leave them on the bike rack without you know, locking them up. And we have yet to experience a problem with that. Is there crime? Of course there's crime. And I don't think you're going to find any area on the globe anywhere without any crime. However, from what we've seen, it seems that crime is very much a function of specific demographic circles. So there, in terms of crime, there might be something that makes the news where there was spousal abuse, for instance, in a dysfunctional family. When something like that happens, it may be drug related. So I would be lying to you if I told you that there was no such thing on the Cape. There is. But it's really a function of whether you choose to make that part of your life or not. And if you don't, then I'm thinking of our friends and the people we know, and I can't think of anybody who's experienced any crime.
It's so good.
So, I mean, if you involve yourself in drug trade or drug distribution, then you sort of bring that into your life.
You know? And right.
But if you don't, then it's not really an issue. We've had no break-ins, again, knock on wood, and our cars have remained unmolested, and you know, our bicycles, it just has, security hasn't been an issue.
It's so different from a city, you know, because we're so used to, we hear things throughout the day here in big cities. So in a more rural environment, yeah, it's a little bit more peaceful.
And I can't think of any area in Falmouth that I would not go to, either daytime or night times.
That's great.
You know, I mean, people just sort of tend to mind their own business.
Yeah.
And it really hasn't been an issue.
And Massachusetts, there are gun laws, so to speak.
There are gun laws. Let me put it this way. Crime is sufficiently contained so that last week a shoplifting made the news.
Okay. So, yeah.
So, I mean, if you were to go to any major city, I don't think that would make...
That wouldn't paper. Even be, no, it wouldn't make the paper here. Certainly not.
I mean, if someone were shot, that, you know, might, depending on where you are, that might, you know, make some headlines, but...
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, that's, so, that puts it
last
in
last week, somebody stole a shirt and, you know, from a store and, you know, that, the, before,
headlines.
Before the day was out, the entire town knew not only what had happened, but also who it was.
So, oh, they knew who it was. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The thief was outed. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Someone looked at the camera footage and said, "Oh, I know that person. That's so and so."
It's really refreshing to hear that. You know, it's pretty much crime free. So we like to hear that.
Well, in a number of ways, it's a bit old-fashioned, you know, and it's.
I kind of like old-fashioned, Tom.
Yeah. I mean, the other day, you know, well, a couple of weeks ago, we had Billy's car in for repair, and then the mechanic called and said, "Well, you know, if you want to get your car," and so we went over to get the car. "Oh, I don't have the invoice ready. You know, I'll just bring it by one of these days." It took him 3 weeks to bring the invoice. He came to the inn and said, "Well, you know, I've got your bill. Hope you don't mind." You know, I said, "Well, of course not." And so we gave him a check, and that was the end of it. You know, so
that's funny. That's so funny. Yeah,
I can imagine you're living in Miami, and you have your car at the mechanics, and they give you the key and hand you the car and say, "You know, I'll come by in 3 weeks and bring an invoice."
Not going to happen. So. No. In fact, they give you the invoice before you even got the keys back.
Exactly.
And want the money up front.
Yep.
So that's pretty nice. It's different.
And at the same time, you know, we've had last minute requests for a cake or something like that. "Oh yeah, I'm coming in tomorrow and it's my wife's birthday and can you make her a birthday cake?" And we'll call the bakery and say, "Guys, you know, we're in a little bit of a fix here. This is what happened. Can you help us out? Sure. Come by in the morning. We'll have something for you.
Nice. Do you have a homeless population at all? I would think not.
It's small enough to be invisible. And there are people with mental illnesses. I think every community has that. And there are some pretty comprehensive support systems. And we don't know of any people with mental issues that are homeless. And essentially they live with their families. And but then the support centers are there to provide assistance, to provide counseling, and so on and so forth. So in answer to your question, I'm really not aware of a homeless population.
Okay.
Definitely no tents or campouts anywhere.
I was going to say that. You don't see tents anywhere or under. Yeah.
I see pictures of downtown San Francisco and Seattle and wonder what happened. I mean, I've been to those areas and 15, 20 years ago, there was nothing like that visible.
I think it's everywhere now. I mean, wherever the weather is kind of temperate, you'll find homeless population there. It gets pretty rough for them, I'll tell you that. And in the middle of the summer here, when the temperatures reach 120 in Phoenix, I don't know how those people really survive, but they do.
And stay in the shade.
Yeah. But they certainly do.
But the other thing is, you see that in coastal New England, there's always been kind of a sense of sobriety about social issues. And if there's somebody visibly in trouble or visibly homeless, somebody's going to pick up the phone and call 911. And then a squad car will show up with some police officers and they'll talk to the person in question and make some kind of arrangements to get that person looked after. And so in a sense, you know, when it comes to containing vagrancy, it's a very old fashioned place. And I would say that's even the case in cities like Boston and Providence and so on. You can drive through those areas and you don't see anybody camped out on the street.
Right.
It's not something that's part of the culture.
Yeah. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. How about
the weather doesn't really encourage that either. So, you know,
The winters. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the healthcare like? Do you have enough doctors to support the population?
Yes. And I'm going to say that and qualify that by saying, until you've gotten yourself plugged into the healthcare system, it takes some effort to do so. But it really wasn't any different in Boston. So there's no surplus of doctors, really. And are there physicians that accept new patients? Yes, there are. And within that context, the healthcare Billy and I have gotten has been excellent. And I've been in for two surgeries since we arrived here. One was a kidney stone removal. The other one was a hernia operation. Those were both performed at Falmouth Hospital. And I felt completely comfortable, completely cared for. The hospital's modern, the equipment is new, it's clean, it works, the staff is trained, the doctors are well educated, and having previously been at a major hospital in Boston, and which I don't want to name because I don't want to bash it, I received quality care there as well, but the experience here is less stressful. When I came down with a kidney stone, you know, Billy took me to the hospital, we went to the ER, the nurse saw us walk in, come on over here, what can I do for you? I said, oh, well, you know, I've had a kidney stone before, these seem to be identical symptoms, I think that's what it is, I'm in pain, and okay, well, let's get you registered, and 5 minutes later, I was on my way to imaging. So, I mean, it doesn't come any more streamlined than that.
Yeah.
And so once they ran me through CAT scan and confirmed that it was a kidney stone, another 10 minutes later, I had my room, and I was on pain medication. And looking out the window, I had a view over the treetops. No buildings, no parking lots, no dumpsters, just nature.
Calming in itself.
Billy had a bilateral catastrophic rotator cuff tear.
Oof.
The rotator cuff was completely detached at both ends. And it required, I think it was 12 micro incisions.
Wow.
And then five or six screws to secure everything. That was done at Falmouth Hospital.
Wow.
It was a 4.5 hour operation. And he was home later on that day and has had no issues. I mean, he's had physical therapy to regain the use of his arm and to rebuild the, you know, the rotator cuff and muscular tissue. But all in all, healthcare has been great. And the dentist here is the best dentist I've ever had in 62 years of living.
Wow.
And now, if I were to have a cerebral aneurysm, I'd probably want to go to Boston and go see a brain specialist.
Right.
I'm not sure I would stay on the Cape to have open heart surgery. But right. In the ordinary course of things, you know, normal operations, sort of the basic stuff, yeah. Yeah, it's completely adequate.
I always wondered on the Cape, like P-Town people, how do they get to a hospital?
No, that's a different story.
Yeah, that's very different.
They don't have a hospital up there. They'd have to go to Cape Cod Hospital, and that's a 45-minute drive. So so either that or, you know, have enough money in the savings bank to pay for a medevac to Boston.
Yeah.
Or that's have some really good health insurance.
Yeah, that's another
problem. But you want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
The day after I was discharged following my kidney stone removal, or actually the day of discharge, Billy and I were scheduled to perform at the museum, and I'd made a commitment to do that. I didn't want to back out of it. You know, so we were there at the museum, and before the start of the show, this very tall, white-haired, nice-looking gentleman walks up to me, and he says, "I hear you've just gotten out of kidney stone surgery." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you know, how was it? And what was it all right?" I said, "Oh, well, the hospital was great. This is what they did, and this and this and this. And the experience was really as stress-free as it could possibly be." And I said, why are you thinking of moving here? You know, and he said, "No, I'm the administrator to the hospital."
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Checking up on you.
Small town.
Yep. So, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So what do you wish that you had in Falmouth that you don't have, that you may have had elsewhere? Is there anything you miss?
More space. Our cottage here on the property is small. It's crowded. It's cramped. And what wouldn't I give for an extra 1,000 square feet? So.
So you're saying your own space.
The cottage in which we live, yeah. And it's part of the... So at some point in time, we might start looking for a house. And the best of all worlds, it would be a situation where one of the abutting neighbors would sell. Mm-hmm. So far, nobody's shown any inclination to do that. But that's really...
So you'll love it there.
On my wish list, you know, something that would just have more space to spread out.
Gotcha. Totally understand that. Are there any cons of living there that you can think of?
In March, you kind of start getting tired of winter. Mm-hmm. And then April comes and it starts getting warmer. And when you see the first, you know, buds on the trees and everything starts looking a little bit green, those are certainly compensating factors. I'll tell you this, I could not think of any other place anywhere on the planet where I would have rather been during a pandemic. And the people here were calm, rational, mask wearing cooperation was high. Vaccination rates are high. Everyone took it seriously. Nobody tried to politicize it or make, you know, a constitutional statement out of it. Hey, we've got this pandemic. We're in this together. Let's all do what's right to make this thing go away.
Boy, I wish the world thought that way.
And there were many days during the pandemic when we were here thinking and listening to the stories we were hearing from guests that had come in from out of town. I was like, yeah, this was a place to be. And socially, it's really nice. We like it. We feel safe. And then, you know, of course, we go on the internet or we listen to the news and we hear about all the BS that's happening globally and different parts of the US. And there have been times Billy and I've, you know, sat at the dinner table and where we've said, you know, it's almost disgusting how normal and how uneventful life is here. You know, And
isn't that nice?
It's almost not normal because it's so normal. And, you know, and you read about people being chased down and shot after traffic stops and you know, political corruption and all sorts of things. And we just kind of look at that and say, what did we ever do to deserve being in a place like this where we don't have these problems? Yeah. So to
you're
your
very lucky,
your gay listeners and anybody who might be, you know, part of the trans community or belong to an ethnic minority, you know, it's if you're having any problems where you live, then you might want to consider the Cape. And it's actually surprisingly diverse. There's a large Brazilian population here, and there's a large Caribbean population. And we go to Hyannis. You know, Billy wants to stop at the Caribbean restaurants, and then we get jerk chicken and, you know, all kinds of things. And so it's much more diverse than you would imagine. And, you know, if you're black or brown or Asian or something, hey, it's fine. Nobody's going to look at you cross-eyed because you look different.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like my type of place, Tom.
I'm not trying to dissuade you from moving, you know, to Spain, but you decide to stay.
It just sounds beautiful.
It is. We really love it.
It does sound wonderful. So, Tom, tell us about where we can find you and your inn and Billy on social media.
Okay. We have a presence on Facebook and Instagram. And that's just Palmer House Inn on both social media. And now our marketing people made it clear that they do not want us to blog on our website. They do that and do it with all the appropriate Google words and what have you, but they gave me complete freedom to do stuff on Facebook. So I'm always doing stuff there. And if you're curious about any of the mischief we get into on a day-to-day basis, then that would be the place to find out. And for instance, this morning, I was on my way to the inn from the cottage, and I had Brody on the leash, and in front of us on a little boardwalk that connects the cottage to the parking lot, there was a rabbit. And, well, that rabbit had no inclination to want to socialize with Brody, and he just hopped off into the woods and he was gone. So then I went back out to the yard, and I thought, well, maybe I can find another rabbit. I mean, what would be more appropriate than a bunny rabbit for Easter weekend, right? So no rabbits. There's nothing around. And I'm in the front yard, I'm looking around for rabbits, and I noticed something out of the corner of my eye, and it was a songbird that flew down to a bunch of daffodils and then sat down right in front of the daffodils. I just opened the zoom lens on the phone, took a picture. That's now on Facebook.
Nice.
So we have sort of miniature wildlife here.
So, yep, we'll have to take a look on Facebook and give your in the light.
No alligators, no bears.
I like that.
We don't.
Well, it depends upon what kind of bears, you know. If it's male bears, you know.
Well, and I'm talking about the kind that knock over your back and make a mess, you know.
Those bears, I don't need.
So basically rabbits and, you know, on occasion a raccoon. And, you were asking me about mosquitoes earlier. There's a large bat population on the Cape.
Okay.
They tend to keep the mosquito population out of control.
Yeah, I'll keep them out of my hair.
So a number of people have little bat houses in their yard, you know, and then the bats just kind of live in them and then come out at night and start feeding on flying insects.
As long as they don't feed on me.
No.
Okay. Do you have a website for your inn?
Yeah, it's www.palmerhouseinn.com.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Tom. Anything else that you'd like to add before?
Just one thing. At the inn, we do a lot of elopements and small weddings. And just last month, Billy and I became non-denominational ministers to allow us to officiate at weddings. So now we get to do them in-house. So
great. That's great. Yeah. That's great. So you hear that, folks? If you're looking to get married in a beautiful surrounding and setting, look up Tom and Billy.
On the website, we have a couple of pictures of people getting married, and and then on Facebook too. So,
awesome.
We've had couples that have asked for Brody to be included in the wedding, so that's like happened once or twice.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining the podcast. This was great. I learned a lot about Falmouth. And yeah, I hope our listening audience takes a trip up there and sees what it's all about. Okay.
And Mark, let me invite you and your husband. If you find it gets too hot in Phoenix in August, then you come on up here and cool off.
Thank you. I much appreciate that very much.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. And yep, I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Mark.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.